Slowly.
Testing. Are we on the air? We're on the air.
Thank you.
Best commercial.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I do like that.
Okay.
Can you reach the
plane
or is it?
Yeah.
So, I still think you can.
Yeah.
It's way down there.
No.
Oh, yeah. That's what I need to explain. Okay, so. This drive, since I just got it yesterday, I don't know the health of it. I assume it's good, but I haven't checked. This one I've checked, and it's good. This is the one that we've done the file history on. And I took that USB stick, and I stuck it in here. It's taped right there.
Wait a minute.
No, nothing like that.
Yourself.
Yeah. And the USB stick is the kind of thing that you probably just stick in a drawer. It's a recovery for the system. It's a recovery for the base system. It has none of your data or programs, but it can build the system back to the way it was when it was bought.
Like it built.
18. It'll put it back to the way it was when it was bought. In fact, that's a consideration in the future. That maybe you want to update the USB stick with the Windows 10 board. Now, I wouldn't do that right now because what I discovered at HP is they're saying they haven't tested this unit for Windows 10.
Oh, good.
I did. Because I got one extra one.
Okay, but you only charged me.
That's right. I mean, unless you guys want the other one, I was going to bring it up.
She's playing pickleball.
Okay, I can be later. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, why don't we just say 12?
And Sheila came over into her court.
So I got to slide in between 11:30 and 12. I'm very punctual, and I can do that. I just hope it's not something that requires more time than 15.
I can't
send
the email.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can on my iPad.
Then I don't know what's going on, but we'll find out.
Take a hammer to it.
You keep talking, you will be our example. The saving grace is that drive was 1,400 pesos here. And I really like these 8 data drives. I got this at JG's Computers. And I like the price. It's a 1 terabyte drive that you can get here locally for 1,400 pesos. And the way the peso is right now, I mean, that's what, is that even $80? I apologize to the Canadians in the audience.
It isn't only
18.3. Yes.
18.3. Oh my God.
11.6.
In case anybody's interested, I'm still taking the peso at 16 to 1, but that may change at some point. I've never changed my price. I've always charged $50 an hour with a minimum of a half hour. That's always been my price, but I change based on what the peso is, and I'm still taking it at 16 to 1.
You are my hero.
See. Thank you.
Yeah, we're getting 11.
What's the street that they're on again?
I don't know the name of the street, but it's the road to Guaymas North.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right there in front of the cop shop. Yeah.
So but that is a good brand, and you.
Yeah, no, I've been very happy with these drives. I've bought them at different times. Now that being said, there's only 2 drive manufacturers in the world. So what they do is they spec out a drive and they pick the lowest bidder. And so they have an intention with these drives to be impact resistant drives. So that should, in a perfect world, mean the outside and the inside has been specced to take a fall, to bounce around in a purse or a laptop bag. And I like the price. It's 1 terabyte. For around the same price in the States, you could buy a 2 terabyte drive. But you couldn't buy an impact-resistant 2-terabyte drive. You would pay a bit more for that kind of qualification.
But the average person doesn't need 2, right?
These are 1,400 pesos. So I think they're a reasonable buy that are available here locally. Mm-hmm. And probably the only thing that I find frustrating with dealing locally with, like, JG's, and I have very few frustrations with JG's, they're a great shop, is that I couldn't buy 2 of them at the same time. I had to buy one, and then they had to restock, and then I had to buy another one. But they're brand new drives, and I'm very happy with using them. The other thing that I got from JG's that I recommend to anybody that's looking at upgrading Windows 10 is these 32 gigabyte sticks.
Well, wait a minute.
It's 220 pesos, which is dirt cheap. They are USB 2. They're not USB 3. But honestly, that's only going to bother you. I'm recommending these for doing the system restore of your computer before you do the Windows 10 upgrade, so you have a backup that would restore your computer to the way it was when it came out of the box. In case everything just falls apart on you, you can put a system restore on here and bring it back.
No. But you lose all your stuff.
That's right. This does not include the data. This is not a data backup. Yeah. This is a system backup.
On mine is Windows 7. I can back up both onto the hard drive, or do I need that?
Okay, so Windows 7 includes a system called System Image. And what that does is it takes a look at all the hard drive partitions. It looks at your hard drive, and it makes a backup of that. And you can put that on the same disk as your backup.
So if I have a failure, I can get, I can restore off the hard drive.
That's right. Now, any given, I was dealing with a Windows 7 system just this last week, and it was a Toshiba, and Toshiba provided a system recovery mechanism for using a USB drive, so that the entire thing could be restored back to a Toshiba version. So in that case, there was two different ways to deal with it. There was a Microsoft way of dealing with it, which was all the partitions. It included the Toshiba recovery partition, but also all your data, everything that's on the hard drives, a disaster recovery. That's the Microsoft version. That will go on an external hard drive, and it will be as big as it needs to be. Like the hard drive has to be, the backup has to be big enough to cover as much as you've got on the computer. Toshiba, in that case, provided a recovery system that needed at least 32 gigabytes, and it copied over the recovery partition that's built in. So you could theoretically rebuild the system as a Toshiba from the stick. It would not include your data. So it's an easy recommendation, but if you've got Windows 7, it's hit or miss whether you've got a system that would take advantage of this kind of recovery. Whereas the other recovery exists, you just need an external hard drive for it. But this is a great price. I started to say it's USB 2, and how that would affect you is building it is slower than 3. 3 is like 10 times faster than 2. But I would go get a cup of coffee rather than pay the difference in price for this capacity. And the same, it would affect you if you had to recover the system. It would be 1/10 the speed of USB 3. And again, it's a great time for coffee at this price for that capacity. It's awesome.
How much was that again?
220 pesos.
Good.
For 32 gigabytes, and if you look at this, this is a really nice package they've got. This is a solid metal key ring format. Yeah. There's nothing that pops out or pops in. There's no moving parts. It's a very nice package for that.
And this is at Walmart?
No, this is at JG's Computers. They've been selling these.
JG.
Yeah, in Guaymas Norte.
I've been waiting for 2 weeks to ask a question, and I learned that sitting down there, you couldn't ask it. and you have
wait, no, you had an opportunity last week, and you asked the classic, what's happening at the Maquilas question. Everybody remembers that, right?
Yes, and I asked the question the week before.
Okay,
and you just answered what's happening in San Carlos.
Okay.
Some of this right here.
All right.
That's interesting. In all respect to Linda, I can't get excited about special TVs.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is a
Oh, isn't that cute? They don't put any kind of name on it. It's a USB flash drive. And you'll see them hanging behind their counter if you go specifically to them. I've been pricing these all over the place. You can actually pick these up in OXO, too. Not this particular name brand. But there's a real... what do you call it? It's just they're all over the place. Right?
Now, that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
This is the best price I've found so far for this capacity. But again, it is USB 2, which is still very common.
Where is this computer?
I've got to run real quick here, and so I'm going to impose myself.
All right, Gary, go ahead.
On Amazon Prime now, it's telling me, even when I'm on a VPN, that I'm out of the geographical area that they allow. So have they tied into HMA and know that all of their different IP addresses? We were watching... Amazon Prime just in the last few days and just in the day before, it's done this.
Do you feel like you've done a good job of verifying that the VPN is working?
Yes.
Yeah? I mean, you pull up web pages as though you're in the United States.
Sources, tried it on the television, tried it on my wife's iPad. Both of them come up with movies we've just seen 3 days, 4 days before, and we're not allowed because we're out of the geographical area.
Well, I mean, like for me, a good test would be if you went to google.com on your laptop using the VPN, and it doesn't try and switch to Google Mexico.
Okay.
And if it does switch to Mexico, then what that's telling you is you're actually not, the VPN's not working.
VPN is going, because I changed the VPN to Texas, California, whatever.
Well, but you're going through a router, and you can't actually change it on the router unless you go through the kinds of motions that I go through to set it up. What you can change it on in HMA is they have apps for your computer and for the iPad, and so you can, in the iPad, you can hook up with a HMA. And that should work. You should be able to get, like on the iPad, there should be the HMA app, and right, you should be able to start that up and be able to use Amazon that way.
And I actually did that this morning before we came over. So I was watching something on Amazon.
Gary, pass that around if you'd like.
Using HMA without a problem.
Oh, okay.
So when I go to HMA and I change the location of the IP address, that does nothing.
When you go to HMA and change the IP address of where you're going to,
right,
it does nothing for your TV set. It only does it for the iPad or the computer that you're on. But it does nothing. But because your smart TV is connected through the router, it does nothing to change the router. Does that make sense?
Okay, I think I understand that, but I did change the IP address on the iPad, and it still came up with the same not allowed geographic.
You're using a
wow
router. Occasionally on mine, I'll be watching Netflix, and I can't get the US. Can't get the US menu. When I check the network settings, it says it's connected to ASUS, which is my router. I check my internet connections; they both say ASUS. Yet it's not working. So I unplugged my Roku and I unplugged the router for about 10 or 15 minutes, plug them back in, reset everything, and it works.
Well, are you talking about the Roku or the router?
The router, yeah. I do both. I unplug
them. I actually don't think you need to unplug the Roku, but the Roku can suffer from problems. And so if things are just acting goofy, yeah, rebooting these things are fine. And the router, I mean, that's the advice I've given you in the past, too. I think you want to find out if your router is having problems making that VPN connection.
Yeah.
And so I would check it through, like, going to Google and seeing if it tries to come up in Spanish in Mexico.
Okay, so it's changing everything behind the scenes at HMA. It's just not necessarily being transmitted from the router to my devices.
Well, and here's the thing. What you're afraid of is potentially a problem that I wanted to bring up today. I don't actually have any topics, but this is one thing that I was following this last week. is they did an interview with one of the executives at Netscape. Or what am I saying, Netscape? God, I just dated myself.
Where the hell did that come from?
Netflix. Netflix. Days. I've been around long enough, there are people out there that don't know what Netscape is. Right, that's right. Now, everybody dial up with your AOL connections. All right, Russ. With Netflix, an executive with Netflix, and he was being asked about the geolocation stuff, and he made it fairly clear that their content providers are going to start requiring them to make to start paying attention to where these feeds are coming from and start trying to block proxies and VPNs.
Why do they do that?
Well, in
what's
in
the law?
Yeah, in this case, it has to do with the licensing. It's not the law, but it's terms of service and copyright licensing. Yeah, the licensing of content. And what he was firm to say is, we don't want to function in that manner. We want to concentrate more on getting global licensing so everyone everywhere has access to the same stuff. And that's what our business model is about, and that's the direction we're pushing towards. But it's obvious that we're going to have to branch into this area as well.
It wouldn't be hard for them to just go to HMA and look at the IP addresses.
Well, and that's exactly what they'll do. Is, in fact, Hulu already does a lot of that kind of stuff. There are services out there that are spending their time creating pools or basically database entries of the IP addresses where global traffic is coming from. And it's not uncommon now to go to a website and have it tell you, you're using an IP address that's associated with VPNs. VPNs typically are used to thwart geolocation on our website. We'd appreciate it if you just come through your normal internet connection because of our policies. And so they'll just block you. Whether you have legitimate reason to be using it or not, they're saying you can't use it with our website.
No. Try to put hide my ass on my Kindle Fire, and they wouldn't take it. They had the Amazon apps have another one that you can use, so I had to buy that as well, so I can get my Showtime through the Kindle.
So the Kindle,
Amazon does not have an HMA app. They have another one. I forget the name of it, but it's got a red E. You have to use that.
Okay, so the Kindle is a unique Android experience because you can only get apps through the Kindle App Store.
Yeah, yeah.
And so those are all sanctioned by Amazon. So even though it's an Android device, legitimately the only way that you don't have legitimate access to all Android applications. It's not an open Android device.
Right.
It's a closed device, very similar to an iPad or an iPhone, where the only options you have are what's provided by the manufacturer, by Amazon. Now, the Kindle, there are ways to crack the Kindle, just like there's ways to jailbreak the iPad. But that may not be something. I mean, that's something I've never actually pursued. I know they exist, though, and there are ways to get other app stores on your Kindle.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but it could very well be, and this is without checking anything out, it could very well be that there isn't a hide-my-ass application sanctioned by Amazon in their app
store. I'm sure they put that out to the highest bidders.
Well,
hide-my-ass may not have bid.
Yeah, all we can do is speculate. I don't have any background on why they wouldn't have Hide My Ass available. But you know what happens with the Kindle apps is they get tied to the App Store. So, like, I think I might have told you guys about this before. I bought Minecraft from Amazon for my kids' tablets. What I didn't know at the time was the App Store has to be installed and has to be accessible for them to be able to run their software. So, like, one of the things that I monkeyed around with is I set parental controls on the App Store, At the time, I didn't want my kids to browse the App Store and be able to just make purchases with my Amazon account. Right? So I did everything Amazon's documentation says. Actually, the very first thing I did was I uninstalled the App Store. I'm like, great, I got the program installed. Now I uninstalled the App Store. That actually worked with the original version that I downloaded. I didn't need the App Store installed in there. It was full-blown Minecraft personal edition, and they didn't need the App Store for anything. When we wanted to do the upgrade, because various versions of Minecraft have come out since then, I installed the App Store again, installed Minecraft, uninstalled the App Store, couldn't run Minecraft without the App Store. Now, this is true on other devices like the iPad, the iPhone. You can't uninstall the App Store from an Apple product. It's married to the whole product. It's integrated into the operating system. It's part of the way it functions. The idea that I can remove an App Store is pretty unique to the Android operating system.
So your kids don't have an Apple iPad, right?
No, not at the moment. I mean, we did go through a period of time with Apple products, but we ended up moving on to Samsung. I still use Apple products.
So now they don't have access to the Apple App Store.
Yeah, well, that's another line of thought right now. But going back to the Android stuff first, so I had to install the App Store, the Amazon App Store in the Android tablet. It's not a Kindle. It's a Samsung. For them to be able to run their software. But I'm still scared they're going to browse it and install their own apps and buy songs and movies and TV. All that's grouped together in the same App Store. So I followed all Amazon's instructions for setting parental controls on it so that it would ask for a password, ask for a PIN so I could give them a PIN instead of giving them my Amazon password. And a PIN's really nice because you can... 4 digits, easy to remember. I could give that to them whenever they want to install something new or upgrade something new. And I could change that at will. Got it all put in place, started testing it, none of it worked. Actually, as a good Samaritan, I spent a good 3 hours with Amazon trying to sort out why it wouldn't work. And all they had for me was, yeah, I'm so surprised it doesn't work. It definitely works with the Kindle. Hopefully it'll work in the future with a release, with an updated release. So like all things I believe parents need to do, I gave up on digitally controlling my children and worked harder on the personal message of, I'm going to take your tablet away if you start buying stuff.
What you need to do for your 10-year-old is to teach them how to go bankrupt.
Right.
Okay? And have your own account.
In some respects, that's true, Bobby. I've actually done that for a birthday present for my 10-year-old. I gave her 300 pesos in the Google Play Store. So I was able to buy her a card at OXXO, of all places.
Really?
And she learned how to take the code off of it. You scrape off a code. And you go to your she has her own Google account, and so she goes to her Google account. The store has never had any money in it. She was able to add money to it from this gift she got, and she's been able to purchase things that she's wanted to purchase. And you know, it's really funny. My generation and your generation. I'm dealing with my wife. She's like, "What kind of present is that?" It's her favorite present is this 300 pesos she gets to spend however she wants on digital goods. I'm blown away by how it's up above Barbies and up above all this other stuff that she can actually touch and play with. That is one of her favorite presents she got. Well, and she's having to budget because she doesn't have more than 300 pesos, and she's already gotten burned once because she bought this software called Minecraft Personal, Minecraft Story Mode, which has become popular. Microsoft is put out an actual action game based in the Minecraft world. And she bought it on her tablet and immediately couldn't get farther than the first level because she was being asked to buy more stuff. Oh. And she's like, Poppy, I just uninstalled it. I'm like, you uninstalled it? Well, then you can't use... She's like, I don't care. I don't want to buy more stuff. That's stupid. I don't know if stupid's the word she used, but it was obvious like that's what she was thinking. Yeah. She's like, all I've got's 300 pesos. I'm not going to waste my money on this one app.
That's good. Scott, I have to leave soon. I'd like to know. You hit on OXO is selling stuff now.
Yes.
Computer stuff, okay.
Well, at least like memory stuff and car connection stuff, yeah.
Okay, but I'm still interested in knowing what's happening that's new with the Maquilas and with San Carlos, you know. And you've hit on several things today.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know what to give you as far as Maquilas go. I mean, it seems like business as usual. Things are...
Nobody's wireless throughout, though, right?
What do you mean? Oh, like a plant?
Yeah, the town is not wireless.
Oh, if there's like free community wireless available? You know, actually, that's interesting you say that. I haven't checked in a long time, but at one point there was free Wi-Fi, municipal Wi-Fi, in the square there in front of the Palacio in Guaymas. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Guaymas was
there. Oh. They at least were. I don't know if it's been maintained. It was a few years ago that I was aware of it. But that may still be a thing in Guaymas.
How many people that are Mexican nationals, like in Guaymas, how many people really use computers?
Wow. Oh, yeah.
Everybody's got a cell phone.
Well, I've got phones.
Cell phones are today's computers.
Yeah, that's right.
They are becoming that.
It is... I'm sorry, Paul, go right ahead.
No, that's all I was going
to
say.
Well, I mean, just to expand on Paul's thought, that's exactly what's going on. It's not so much they're using cell phones, they're not using computers. It's much more the PC includes cell phones now. When you say PC, you mean tablet. You mean laptop, you mean desktop, but you really mean tablet, you mean cell phone, you mean mini tablets. Pretty soon it's going to mean Google Glass and HoloLens. And
not so many of towers on their desks.
Yeah, there aren't people looking for towers now.
Oh.
I mean, what they're looking for is a good screen to be able to access the internet with. And every Mexican I know has a smartphone.
Yeah.
And part of it is because you can get a fairly powerful smartphone for just $100, $200. So these high-end cell phones are falling short these days. It used to be... Oh, yes.
You don't have to spend $100. I bought a cell phone just for driving in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Bought the cheapest one that Walmart had. $19.95 does everything.
Right, you've got GPS, you can check your email, you can surf web pages.
Videos, camera, the whole...
And there's a phone's getting held up behind us. Okay, what did you pay for your phone?
That was $45 in Canada.
$45 in Canada.
25?
45.
It's an
LG.
Wow.
And it's
Canadian dollars.
She got it last summer. some weird little startup, but no contract. So as soon as we got stateside, we got AT&T went on it.
So it wasn't locked.
I mean,
$55 a month for AT&T Mexico, Canada, and U.S.
Oh, that's nice.
And it is Canada, isn't it? I wasn't sure about that. I knew it was Mexico and U.S., but it is Canada as well.
And it works fine. You just have to have the
Jim, what he said is he got it in Canada.
I know, but the AT&T plan he was talking about.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, question. That is Canada and Mexico.
We picked up the AT&T in Yuma, and it's working fine down here. You dial Canada or U.S., you dial 001. Anything in Mexico is 011. And if you need to use an 800 number, I think it's 110. I've got it written down. We don't use it much. So
in Canada, same thing,
001, same as U.S.
No roaming charges.
Same as U.S.
No roaming charges.
Unlimited text.
We've had it now since November down here, and it's $55 a month, unlimited Canada, U.S., and Mexico.
Now, to expand this idea further, I just saw a statistic that was showing 25% of smartphone owners don't make any voice calls. They have no intention of making voice calls, and that's not the reason they own the device. It's all texting and web services, internet services.
They're scared of talking.
They don't want to talk.
They don't want to talk.
Yeah.
That's close to this, face to face.
So it's all what you call data, right?
It's all data, that's right. Consequently, living in that kind of world, you can get some amazing talk time plans. I mean, if you're somebody that wants to talk on a cell phone, it's basically unlimited in the United States.
Yeah.
But if you go to Europe and you don't turn off your data, you get a bill sometimes that are just outstanding.
Well, sure, and you want to pay attention to what you are doing roaming. But because that became such an issue, those are features in a smartphone now. Like we all that have smartphones now run around with phones that you turn data roaming off. It's just a switch in the settings. Mm-hmm. And so as soon as you're in a position where you might incur those kinds of fees, it's not allowing you to do it. Which is back when we first started with smartphones, that wasn't the case.
Is that like putting it in airplane mode?
No, this is actually, and you'll find it if you've got the latest updates for your smart device. You'll find it right in the settings under the cell data stuff, where you can flip a switch to say no cell roaming or no data roaming. And what that means is you'll have data within your contracted coverage area, and when you fall out of that coverage area into a roaming area, you lose data. And it's because your phone's making that decision. Because the phone identifies itself as being in a roaming area. And so as soon as it's identified as in a roaming area, it shuts off your ability to use any of those services.
And then when you're having breakfast the next morning, you can turn it on and get your information.
Well, and you can put it in Wi-Fi hotspots and use it. And I mean, it's essentially, I have to do it when I go to the States. I really don't want to change my cell phone plan because I got an ancient unlimited data plan that I like to take advantage of all the time. I like to run the club off of it sometimes when we have problems with the internet here and without incurring any additional cost.
But you can't use it in the States.
You can't use it in the States because it's roaming.
Your little thing that you showed us that you passed around.
This USB flash drive.
That's for data.
Sure. It's in place of an external hard drive or an optical drive, it's for putting files on it.
Yeah. I noticed that Telcel has changed their policy. Before I go buy 500 pesos of minutes, which I did yesterday, and I expected to get 650 or 700.
More than we've ever
so now used. They're not giving you any break.
They are.
Oh, they used to give you.
Well,
I buy 500 pesos worth of minutes, and I get a couple hundred extra.
Yeah, you did. That's true. You did.
But I didn't yesterday.
Huh. I know nothing about that.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. That's interesting. I don't do pay as you go. You know, I could ask my wife and my sister-in-law about it because they've got pay as you go plans, and see if they've noticed such a thing.
How do you know your balance?
Drawer someplace.
How do you know your balance on your Telcel?
Oh, easy. I go to, in this case, it's, let me.
Does the phone report it to you?
Yeah,
or do you have
yeah.
To, oh, really?
Yeah, star
one three three pound.
And then I hit it, and it goes on and tells me exactly how many pesos I have.
Star 133 pounds?
Star
one. Oh, it must star come back as like some special text message.
It does. It tells you how much time you have and when you have to renew it.
That's neat.
That's great.
But you're right. We did used to get extra.
Yeah.
Star.
Nothing extra.
Interesting.
Star 11.
You might have to come into the
133.
133.
Is that a Canadian phone show?
It is.
What is it?
Gosh, we got started so impromptu. I didn't announce our club meeting. I didn't spend it. Nobody knows we're here live right now.
How about the chat room?
The chat room's not on.
They should just come and join us.
If anybody's listening, if they've tuned in with us and they're curious what's going on. Yeah, okay, cool. I didn't know which Gary wanted to buy. Chat room is on. Yeah, so anybody that's just joining us and or has been listening and curious what's going on, this is the San Carlos Computer Club. We meet every Tuesday. We start at 9:15. That's why you heard us talking for the last half hour without any introductions. We've been talking about storage mechanisms, VPNs, and cell phones taking over and dominating the PC space. On that note, I wanted to add one more thing. The latest Windows cell phones that were announced by Microsoft, the Microsoft cell phones, and these are the Lumia, I think they're the 950 and the 950 XL, are phones that are similar to true PCs. They're still running a mobile operating a mobile chipset, but they're running Windows 10, and they have the capacity to be plugged into a docking station, so that you can open up Microsoft Office.
Wow.
You can look at a big screen and have a keyboard and mouse available. And they're trying to sell this concept mostly to corporations, so that basically you've got your PC in your pocket all the time. Okay, and they can do that because they've created mobile versions for Microsoft Office, which is their productivity pack, and they're working with partners to create more and more mobile applications. And the idea is that they're Windows 10 applications. So these are, if you're running Windows 10, these are the apps that you find in the store. And when they make a Windows 10 application, it's very simple to make it a mobile application as well. And as a consumer, you really don't tell the difference whether it's sitting on your laptop or sitting on your phone. It's the same motif. Yeah. It's the same functions. It's essentially the same application in both places. And from a developer's point of view, it's almost as simple as just checking a couple of boxes saying make this available on the phone as well. Oh. And so Microsoft's tried to make it as painless as possible for people to develop new Windows applications for Windows 10 and make them cross-platform for their mobile stuff. So it's not inconceivable to think that you'll have a version of Photoshop that would run on your phone. But then the phone of the future, you're plugging into a big screen, a big flat screen and a keyboard mouse, so you can sit down at your desk and work on it. Or you're working on spreadsheets, and you can work on them on the subway, and you get to work, you plug into your docking station, you keep working on the same thing. Or even the data doesn't have to come with you, because the same device is able to access that cloud space. And so the same document that's being worked on by your boss is being worked on your phone, which is being worked on by you at your desk on the phone through a big screen and a keyboard and mouse.
How do they provide safety for that, so somebody else can't access it?
All those have security practices in place for it. Go ahead, Paul.
I was going to say, I was in Walmart yesterday. You know, after I talked to you about the extenders or whatever. And so they didn't have any, but they had the little chip here. It's for 800 and some pesos, turn your television into a smart TV.
Yeah.
For, 800 and some pesos. So I think, my goodness, I'm glad I didn't go out and spend that extra $200 to $300. For a smart TV, because for $35-40, I can turn mine into
one. Now, is it connected? Just
USB?
USB?
Well, no, it's HDMI.
HDMI.
I mean, it gives you the same experience as USB, yeah. Because it's a little device. You just plug into an HDMI port instead of a USB port, and it brings a computer, a basic computer, to your television. And so you go to HDMI 2 or HDMI 1, right. Whatever you have it hooked into, and you are presented with a TV that's like a smart interface. Now, I imagine you have to add a keyboard and mouse to it or some sort of so some sort of
I don't know.
Unless it came with its own remote, is essentially what a Roku is. A Roku turns a TV into a smart TV, and it comes with its own remote control. There's a lot of these boxes out there now that will do these things. You can get off-brand things. You can, if you go on to Amazon or eBay, you can find Amazon TV boxes. Now, I said Amazon. Amazon is the same idea, but I meant to say Android TV boxes. So it's like having an Android phone, but it's using your TV as the screen. And so you have access to the Google Play Store. You can load games into it. You could do productivity stuff because there's Office software for Android, so you could bring a version of Office to your TV set.
Would J&G have these?
Gosh, I didn't see any in there the last time I was in there.
So basically, you'd have to order from a...
Well, you'd buy from... I mean, I wouldn't be surprised
if... You'd have to get a retail environment.
Well, maybe. You know, I haven't gone looking for them. But you have a large selection of them through mail order. Whereas you would be at the mercy of whatever's available at any retail place. I mean, they would be selling probably at most two around here. I mean, I would think you'd be lucky to find one, but at most I wouldn't think there'd be more than two.
It's an Android TV box.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, I would recommend mail order. I'd recommend, if you're interested in that, just start searching for Android TV boxes, and you'll start getting some name brands and going through reviews, because some of the complaints you get from these is the processing power. Like, you bought it specifically so you could do your mobile games on your TV set, and some people are disappointed with this particular product versus another product because of the processing power or the screen quality.
So right now I'm watching Showtime on my Kindle.
Showtime on your
screen.
Kindle.
So if I got one of these things...
I see where you're going with this, That's right. Yeah. But at the same time, you might even be able to find an HDMI adapter for your Kindle, and you could just dock your Kindle to your TV.
You know, I don't see anywhere where I can plug this that in.
Hmm. Well, if you were looking for these Android... The Android TV idea has been around for a while.
Okay.
I would... If that's the route you're going... Definitely make sure it has HDMI.
Yeah.
And more than just the output, because this is one of the complaints I've heard before, they've got the standard for the connection, so physically it'll connect, but it can't produce the frame rates of HDMI. Okay, so instead of 1080p, maybe the very best you could do is 720p. Does that make sense?
You want it to be able to get 1080p.
So how do you know
right.
what it has?
Well, you want to read reviews about them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, if you're in the Amazon store looking at a product, you'd want to look in the review section and see if anyone's complaining that they're not getting HDMI. Because I can tell you, all of them are going to be HDMI connectors, because that's what we connect with now.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that it's going to be able to produce 1080p. And
faster.
Future-proofing, you might be concerned of whether it can do 4K.
Yeah.
Now, in a box like that, you might actually want to make that a consideration, because it might be the difference of $40. So you might be looking at an $80 box versus a $120 box. I personally, I don't think that 4K is a consideration for TVs right now. There isn't enough 4K content.
Right,
and the difference in price is astronomical. You're looking at the exact same set supporting... I mean, if you're in the market for a new TV right now, I wouldn't let 4K be the deciding factor, because the value, the amount of money, the difference between the high-definition TV and the 4K TV doesn't justify the gap in time you're going to be waiting for 4K to come around.
Yeah.
Not to mention, when it finally does come around, you may still not be doing 4K because of the amount of bandwidth it's going to require from your internet connection to take advantage of it. So if you were to buy a new TV, I wouldn't use 4K as a deciding factor.
So,
but these,
if you look at a tablet with HDMI, you have to be concerned about the same stuff, right? Whether it can get 1080p.
Well, whether it can produce it. Yeah, like my tablet right here is an ancient HP tablet. it has to transcode 1080p to 720p because the processor can't keep up with it. It can stream that information into it, but it can't produce it on the screen. And what it does is this stuff. It's right. And frame rates are very important with this stuff. Like it might say 1080p at 30 frames a second, which is okay, but it's not 60 frames a second, which is what people the standard that most people go by.
Back to the device that you saw at Walmart, did it have a remote control with it?
I don't think so. I think it was just a chip, not a chip, but HMD or something. I didn't really pay a lot of attention to it because I was looking that for something else.
So you'd have to use your TV remote then.
Yeah. But I thought, gee, this might be great because I had something like that when my wife was ill on our TV, so we could look at all the pictures of our trips and she could see them on a 42-inch screen, which was nice, but other than that. Remember before I left for California, I ordered a Roku remote?
Yes.
And you said it'd be interesting to know how long it took to get down here?
Yeah.
Well, I ordered it, and 30 days later, the last day I'm getting ready to go home, guess what came in the mail?
It shows up 30 days later. Wow. Now, Paul, this year, this season, completely different experience. You can order a Roku right from Amazon.com.mx. Okay. And they've got 7-day delivery.
Yeah.
And I think in classic Mexican form, there isn't next day delivery and there isn't 30-day delivery. There's 7-day delivery. That's all they got. Right? And I think it has to do with their infrastructure and competition in the shipping market and the way that they've set everything up. But I think they can reliably expect 7-day delivery. And they can't, there's no flexibility in that. I don't see anywhere so far where you could pay a ridiculous amount of money to get it next day. But 7-day seems very...
Yeah, that's 7 days.
I think 7 days is great for Mexico.
Well, sure, better than
good in the U.S. sometimes.
Yeah. Well, and free shipping if you spend over $60. Yeah. I think it's like $7.99. If you pay more than $7.99 in pesos, you get free shipping. And keep that in mind if you start using Amazon Mexico. Make a shopping cart. Don't just order one thing. Make a shopping cart of things. It'll all come in the same box, and it'll all get there at the same time. And when it hits that price point, then it's free shipping.
If you know anybody needs a Roku One
remote control, you've got it. Yes,
I have a meeting.
Last meeting, you said something. We were talking about Kodi, the TV.
Oh yeah.
Interface, and I went home.
See you later.
I downloaded.
See you, Paul.
Take care.
I basically just went Kodi.com, download it, installed, and then you go to the YouTube, you search YouTube for Kodi, and there's 20, 30 videos on how to install it, how to work it. And I went through there's one app, it's called the Wizard, and it set up a whole bunch of things, and that's about as far as I got, but that was fairly painless. I can watch movies, some news. But there's a whole list of things that you can go and get and put in. That part isn't quite as painless as just using that wizard. The going to get the individual pieces, you go through some steps to get there. But it works fine.
I'm very disappointed in myself.
Yeah, you said you were going to do that.
I did do it.
Oh,
and
did?
I had a bad experience.
Oh.
But what I didn't do is I didn't go watch a bunch of YouTube
there
videos.
You go. You just jumped right in.
I was like, hey, I'm Scott. I can do this. I got it successfully installed and was completely lost. And I've got so much experience working with these styles of software. I'm like, no, really? And I started looking for apps, and I was having problems finding apps that would do anything for me. And
the first two or three...
No, I'm going to go look for the Wizard.
The Wizard.
Yeah.
Well, the Wizard installs a bunch, and then you get about four movie channels and some other stuff.
Are these options that come up that you can select after you've downloaded them?
I'm really glad to hear that you had a good experience, Bill.
Player. It's a player, basically. Yeah. And then the first thing you do after that is go to the YouTube and Google or search for Kodi, and then you just pick There's one on downloading and installing. There's one on installing individual pieces. There's 100 YouTube.
You have re-inspired me. I'm going to go back to it this week.
I didn't mean to embarrass you.
No. That's. I think it's a testimony to what you've done is a great approach to dealing with any of this stuff. And I should have gone to YouTube and got some background before I just jumped into it.
Like Linda said last week, you've got to do a lot of pause, go back, and then back up, pause, back, because it is reason. There's a significant amount of steps in there that have to be done.
Well, and this idea that there's a wizard that would pull out, like what I was running into is, I go, oh, that looks like a good app, and I would download it, and I would try it, and it wouldn't work. I'd be like, well, that's not a good app, and so I'd remove it, and then I'd go on to another app. And what I can see as a real advantage with a wizard is you can bet they're pulling only good apps for you.
They all work.
And where did you get the wizard again?
From YouTube.
The wizard's in Cody.
You get the instructions to install this stuff from the YouTube videos.
Right.
And then you get the others out in the internet.
Was the wizard integrated into Cody, or was that an app itself you had to install?
Right.
But you had to. I believe you had to install the wizard app. I can't remember now.
I'll look for it because I want to have a good experience.
That told you about the wizard?
Yes.
YouTube told you to get the wizard, however you got it.
I don't usually let YouTube tell me anything, but this time.
But
I
you did this time.
This time I allowed it. Yeah, you just go in there, find a YouTube video that's making sense, and it'll step you through it. Like you say, you have to stop it, go over and do it, because it's not immediately obvious how to do it. I had to keep going back and listen to the instruction again, and then come over here. You got to do some HTTP typing in there too to get to the sites.
Scary stuff.
Yeah, that is somewhat scary, especially when I can't remember the whole damn address. But it's worth doing. It's worth working. Now. The movies that I have tried to watch don't seem to want to load in the highest quality. Best I can get is medium quality, but I think that's a function of what I got for speed.
Yeah, no,
high quality, nothing happens. It doesn't say no, you can't do this; just nothing happens.
That's what I'm going through right now.
Now I've used software that's behaved like that.
Yeah.
Have you tried just leaving it there?
And let it.
Just leaving it there. Because the difference between standard definition and high definition is more than twice the wait time.
I should try.
Just put it on high definition and just let it sit. Give it 10 minutes. Yeah, give it and see if it'll come up with high definition.
Well, I've seen that happen too.
Because if it is a speed issue and only a speed issue, there's a very good chance that's all it would take is just being more patient with it. Because there's a dramatic difference when you go to standard definition versus high definition on a download. YouTube has a very good codec for doing it so that you start getting instant results. But it's the only service I know of that has a really good way of doing it. All the others that I've dealt with, the wait time is crazy for high definition.
But once you get it started, if you have a very slow speed to begin with,
that won't help you.
Won't you almost immediately get a buffering issue? It'll play for a few minutes and then
very good chance. But really it's dependent on each application and each device. You got a number of things there that can affect it. The app itself can be poorly written so that you get that experience where you're buffering. The app could be written in a way where it won't play unless that buffering issue won't appear. And I think Netflix works that way, where you get enough of the content into your device that you won't experience buffering, but you've got this wait time ahead of it.
Right. Where it preloads.
Right. There are other things that are so poorly written, you don't even get to start playing it until the whole thing's gotten into your device. Taking those different three scenarios, then the device you're trying to watch it in is subject to problems. Like I've got an old Roku device that I've overwhelmed with content, and it will freeze and reboot. and it's obvious to me, it just doesn't have the memory to store the amount of content
it needs to store to get by the buffering issue.
That's right.
Well,
so you've got your device, you've got the app, you've got the service, you've got your internet connection, all those things affecting this ability. Well, and then the TV you've got it plugged into, whether it can handle it or not.
Oh,
okay, yeah.
Well, just watching it on.
And one more thing, that the player works a lot like Netflix, that if you start watching something and then you go away and you come back the next day, it'll say, do you want to resume or do you want to start over? And it doesn't seem to matter which one of the channels that you're watching, it keeps track.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was going to say, I would expect that to be a function of the channel, not but the Kodi Pro Player.
It doesn't seem to be.
Huh. Very cool.
Is anyone familiar with ASUS computers?
Yes, I am.
You have one? It's okay.
ASUS. Oh, ASUS?
I see it at Walmart now.
Really? It was high, medium in price.
HP.
It's a but I've been
worried HP most of it.
ASUS has been a good name brand for years.
Really?
Yeah, they came on the scene in the consumer space probably 8 years ago. They became really started being recognized by you and me. But for tech people, we've been using ASUS motherboards and ASUS parts for years. They used to build motherboards for like IBM and for HP. And they were so successful at that, they started producing their own. And they were always considered a high-quality motherboard. And then when they got in laptops and started doing these mini PCs, they've got a really good reputation for that stuff as well now.
Two numbers when you're buying a computer. The gigabytes of the memory board, you know, they'll say like 16...
Mm-hmm.
That's the memory board, right?
Well, it'd be RAM.
RAM.
Yeah, RAM memory.
Okay. And the other one is the memory board.
You've got
2Gs, 4Gs.
You've got processor speed.
Okay.
You've got RAM space,
okay.
And you've got storage capacity.
Do any of those have anything to do with helping your internet connection?
Well, that's a tough question to answer, because what they directly affect is your experience on the internet. So the same internet connection with a slower computer will cause graphics to appear slower, and you'll feel like you have a slower internet connection, even though it's the same speed as the computer sitting right next to it.
That's the processing number?
Well, it's processing, it's the video processor. It's the video memory. These things can direct. Like, for example, I'm constantly waiting for pages to come up on this computer. I'm not waiting for them because my internet's slow. I'm waiting for them because the video processing is very slow in this. If I go over to my desk and use my Mac, the pages come up just like that because it's got a lot more video memory. It's got a faster video processing card. In many cases, and it's because the internet's become so heavy, the web pages contain so much content, that in many cases you've got all that downloaded into your computer, but then it has to display it, and it's that display performance that you're talking about.
So you need to look into all those specs.
Well, very specifically, you want to look into the video specs.
Yeah, okay.
But also, I would say, unless you're truly concerned about battery life and mobility, the processor you want has to at least be a 2 gigahertz processor.
But they all are now, right?
No, not necessarily. It depends on the classification of the computer, where you're trying to save energy on it. Yeah, and there are processors out there that are rated between 1.6 gigahertz and 2.4 gigahertz. And they just go up and down in speed depending on your activity. Now, that up and down in speed, you feel it. You feel the computer go slow until it starts cranking itself up. And that's a user experience problem as well. When you sit down to the exact same computer you were doing great things on yesterday and you hit a button and you're waiting for stuff to happen, you're like, what happened? Everything was so great yesterday. And it's not until you start rolling. I mean, it's kind of like gearing it up, right? It's not until you start rolling, you start feeling the price, and you start hearing fans going, and consequently, when you're up at that high performance, your battery life diminishes quicker. You use more electricity. I think that to stay on the safe side, unless you have a very specific need for long battery life in a mobile device, it's easier just say look for processors that are 2 gigahertz or higher. Make that one of your specs, and that won't be an issue. But you still want to look at video performance, because the video performance in the end is what's producing those pages in front of you.
How do they define the video performance then when you're looking at these things?
Yeah, it's tough to say. What would you look at? Because video cards are rated like CPUs now. They've got their own speed, and they've got their own memory. And so you're looking for memory. A lot of computers will say it's got 1 gig of video memory. Well, that's plenty for any web surfing. That would be plenty. And the idea that they've included 1 gig of memory would mean that it's a high speed video card, because there's no reason to include that much memory with a low capacity. Now, some of these really great priced laptops are great priced because the video is integrated right onto the CPU's chip. So it doesn't have a separate editing process. Video. And so, I mean, I guess what I can say safely is you want to look at a review of anything you're about to buy. And I still like to touch a computer and see how it behaves. It's getting harder and harder to buy computers in that fashion. You go to Sam's Club, you might look at, there's a dozen computers there you're not interested in. Those are the only ones that you have to touch.
What works really well is pay a bunch of money for it, and you're probably going to get a better computer.
Not necessarily. Or not.
Well, and again, we still continue to talk about PCs and laptops, and I really think, and I've had this conversation with a lot of my customers, you need to do some soul searching whether you need to stay in these PCs and laptops, because there's 1,000 different ways to do what you've been doing. If you're surfing web pages and reading newspapers and checking email and Skyping and instant messaging and Facebooking, all these things can be done with a tablet now. Yep. And the tablet allows you to do it lying down in bed or in a lazy boy with a lot better... A lot better.
Are you trying to tell us something?
I'm just saying when
you work in wheelchairs with walkers.
I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is I'm trying to point out the convenience factor. While you're at the breakfast table, or while you're out on the patio,
you're saying tablet, because like I'm finding this iPad. I only use it for FaceTime, and I've been using it more while my computer's been at your place. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to use it. Well, one thing I wanted to do was to download some audio onto it. There's no USB port.
Right.
So what do I do? How do I get things onto this thing?
Well, other than a USB, what kind of things were you trying to put in it?
We had some Spanish audio tapes that we wanted to listen to.
And you've got them as audio files.
No, they're audio files.
So it feels a little arcane because of what I'm saying, but you could put them onto a cloud service like Dropbox and then pull them out with Dropbox on your tablet.
Okay, wait a minute. So we were trying to figure out this iCloud.
Yeah,
well, we were trying
iCloud.
To figure out iCloud and how to upload things to iCloud and then download them again, and we were totally lost.
Yeah.
We didn't get it very far.
Do you have it on your computer? iCloud on your computer?
Yep.
Yeah.
You can usually do it, I think.
I don't know. It's just a matter of sitting down and fighting through it and figuring out
what to do.
But Dropbox is something you could use with. I don't know if I need another step in there. Put it in the cloud. Now what do you do with it?
You go to the other machine and pull it out.
That's right. Yeah. That's the process that's going on.
But how does the other machine get to it?
it's in the cloud. They're both looking at the same spot.
Well, in the example of
identified with your computer, now her computer's breaching.
What you can do is you can hook your iPad to your computer and do it that way.
Oh, with the little.
Well, yeah, you could do it that way, but it doesn't work with my conversation. Damn it! That's not my point. And to be fair, what you're asking to do is above and beyond just surfing web pages and checking email and reading newspapers and watching videos and doing Skype conversations, which is what a majority of people are doing now. And all those things can be done with a device that costs less, has better battery life, is much more convenient to use.
Don't they cost $200 more?
A tablet?
Computers and tablets, and they're like $150, $200 more than a comparable computer, a laptop.
Oh, well, I disagree. You could get a $200 Samsung to do all that. His 49. Well, how much is that mini tablet you got there?
This was $180 at Costco.
Oh, really?
U.S.
I was on Best Buy website yesterday, so maybe I got a little wrong.
And if you really want to, if you want to take it like the full Monty, you could add a Bluetooth keyboard to it if that's what you're missing. But I would argue that if you're doing things of that high a productivity, then you probably are looking for a laptop.
Is it what the HDMI port and the USB port?
Well, mostly because you're expecting yourself to sit down and do this kind of work. And if you're expecting yourself to sit down and do this kind of work, then maybe you are in the market for a computer. But if what you find is you're doing this kind of work all the time, this is really the majority of your work, is this, and occasionally you find yourself on the keyboard, then I would bet a tablet's probably what you're looking for. And they're better priced, and they got better batteries, and they're more convenient. And I'll tell you what makes it, even if you got one of those high-end tablets, like an iPad is a high-end tablet, you could spend $1,000 on an iPad. But even if you did, bring the price of my service into it. Oh my God, I can't believe I'm going to do this. When you have to call me because you have a virus, I charge you $50 an hour for a home visit. Right? Well, that adds up very quickly. And if you're in an operating system like a Windows environment, you might have that experience twice a year, maybe three times a year. So that all has to go into the price of this dedicated device that I'm recommending. I mean, like, there's $150 right there you could be putting towards a more convenient device that's less likely to get viruses and malware.
That's less likely?
That's the other thing.
Tablets are less likely.
Well, in the traditional form where it's shutting you down, where...
Oh.
Yeah. Also think about things like... I mean, I've had this conversation with a number of customers recently because they're maintaining a computer that's, let's say, 5 years old. Right? They love it. They're used to it. Hard drive dies in it. Hard drive costs $100. The labor to replace and restore their systems, $100. It's $200 to make a computer that's 5 years old run.
Yeah.
That doesn't make a lot of sense in my world.
Yeah.
I mean, if anything, I'd rather you take the $200 and go buy a new device. You might be able to actually get what you want in $200.
Yeah.
Right? And then anything above that, well, hire me to come help you use it, help you set it up. I answer your questions with it. To me, that's more intelligent work as well. Sure. Instead of promoting, continuing to use this older technology.
You have a newer machine too.
Yeah.
You know, so
coming back to her problems. There's an app for that. You can go out and get an app for Spanish.
Okay. Well that's the other thing.
There you go.
I've been looking for speak and talk or whatever those high things, and it's telling me my storage is full. And I'm having to delete all my apps.
I pay $1 extra a month to get more storage. I've been doing that for the last year or so.
With iCloud.
Yeah.
And
that's my iCloud storage, or is it my?
Well, it could be the internal storage. How much storage did you get with it? Because this is a good discussion.
And just look.
Because
settings, general, manage storage.
Because there's been a debate amongst tech people ever since they've released these latest iPhone 6s, that it's ridiculous that they still sell a 16 gigabyte version.
I think it's 13, actually.
No, it's 16 gigs.
Oh.
And depending on the year of yours, it should be 16 or more.
Can't remember where.
Did they sell a smaller? I can't remember if they sold a smaller iPad.
I don't think
storage
so.
And iPod usage.
I think it's always been 16 or more.
Yeah.
But what they sell now is a phone that has 16, a phone that has 64, and a phone that has
128.
Yeah.
And the point being, why do they keep producing these 16 gigabyte devices? And the best.
Well, is there a cost differential? It's.
Well, there's
huge.
A slight cost differential.
Just a slight,
it's like a $100, $150 price difference.
Yeah.
But what I've heard, the best argument I can find for it, in my opinion, is that's the corporate product. That 16 gigabyte is for the small business and medium-sized business that wants to have their employees have access to a smart device without them turning it into their personal device.
Oh, okay.
That it's locked down. They're using cloud services provided by the organization.
Probably so.
Yeah. It's a way to control them.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So that they can they can hand it over to IT and they can flash it back fresh to zero. They don't have to worry about people's personal stuff on it. It's not intended for that in the first place. And they make it up in the margins of the numbers when they buy. You buy a bunch of them. You save a few hundred dollars on them. So, that being said, I would look for a device with a reasonable amount of storage. And I think a reasonable amount of storage is anywhere between 64 and up. I think that's you should just consider 64 gigabytes of storage a low end when you look at these devices.
I've got used 8.9 and available 3.5.
So you've got 16 gigs. And the frustration is that there's a percentage of that that's used by iOS.
And then down here in the iCloud storage,
you have 5 gigs,
and available 4.6.
Yeah, so you've got most of your free iCloud storage available. 5 gigs would be more than enough for. Well, actually, now that I say that, how long are the audio?
There's 6 minutes, just standard audio.
But there are a lot of different lessons.
Yeah, so I've got all these
but
apps.
We're trying to load them all. We're just trying to load a few.
Yeah. Okay.
So it might be. 10 megabytes total. Megabytes, not gigabytes.
So, I haven't used iCloud as a drive, but I know it's possible.
Okay.
I have used Dropbox as a drive, and I find it very simple to use. I run Dropbox on a computer. I dump anything in it that I want to have available to any other device, and I run the Dropbox app on whatever device I want to have access to it, and I can either leave it in Dropbox and use it from Dropbox on the device, or I can pull it over to my device.
And empty Dropbox out.
Yeah. Well, not necessarily empty it out, but put a copy on the device I'm carrying around. Yeah.
Well, if you...
You're welcome, Robin.
See you guys later.
Dag?
Hey, Dag.
We'll see you guys later.
Robin,
see you next Tuesday, later. If not sooner.
Yeah.
Possibly sooner.
Possibly sooner.
That's my dancing buddy.
I just looked it up.
See you guys.
It's unlimited texting, unlimited.
And the point of my conversation wasn't to get into the idiosyncrasies of each device and their capacity, but more just a hello to these devices or an eye opening to these devices. So many of us get caught in the old paradigm of thinking, my computer broke, I need to replace it with another computer. And that's not necessarily the case. A lot of you folks have computers because that was the only way you could do it before. And now we have thousands of different ways to do the same thing.
Well, and sometimes, too, I think people become comfortable with whatever device they're using.
Trying to get the same sort of plan.
And so if they want to change,
it's
kind of like driving your car the same way every day to work and never changing the route or anything like that.
Right.
See what else is around. You become comfortable.
Well, you're absolutely right, and some people just I want to go to a corner in my house and sit and do my email in front of the same screen of our... And that's where the hard drive replacement scenario, I think, is a real wake-up call. It's like, so you want to pay $200. A new computer is $500. That is 10 times the computer you're having me fix.
Probably won't have any problems.
He's down in Mazatlan now.
But you are going to have to learn a whole new way to do things because it's a brand new computer. So when you're comparing apples to apples, and like I said, you might actually reach for an orange. Because it's a cheaper price. Yes, you're going to have to learn everything new again, but you're going to have to do that with this bright new shiny apple. You're going to have to do that too, because it's not the same operating system.
Unless you go from a PC to a Mac or Apple. To me would be a dramatic change. Windows 7 to Windows 8 was no big deal, and 8 to 10 is no big deal.
Well, that's a personal experience for you, Maggie, because internet is full of people complaining about Windows 8
7 to
and
8.
Having to make that transition.
Yeah, I remember
7
that.
To 8 was a toughie.
And I am addressing the seniors in the room because... My customer base
is a wee bit older.
And lots of times I think seniors are more reluctant.
Absolutely.
Want to go through that learning curve process.
I'm more comfortable with
what they've been doing.
I installed my own Windows 10, and I'm probably as stupid about computers as anybody in the world. And I had no problems whatsoever.
Did you back up ahead of time?
Pardon?
Did you back up ahead of time like he suggested?
I didn't even back up ahead.
Wow.
I just went ahead and did it, and everything went boom. Took my wife's computer, did the same thing, and no problem whatsoever.
Can I ask a question? I'm in the process of downloading 10.
Okay.
I'm on Infinitum.
Okay.
Infinitum. It keeps cutting me off. Okay. Start over again, you know, go through the whole deal. And I start, you know, like 17%, and then the 24%. I'm up to 72%. Am I going to have problems using this when they have cut it off and started up again with the installation process?
You're going through the install, or you're going, are you using Windows? Are you using Windows updates?
Yes.
You're using Windows updates, yes. And what's happening is it's saying there's a problem, it can't. No, you shouldn't. I mean, if you're getting interrupted during the Windows updates download install procedure, it shouldn't affect
the outcome.
It shouldn't affect what you end up with.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I would be concerned about why it's getting cut off.
Can I ask what time of day you're doing this?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I started late morning, and I think it's because they're just jammed, and I'm on Via Hermosa, and.
No.
And
I'm
what
having the same problem though with trying to show a movie at some times of the day, and you know, I've done all the speed tests, and I'm out of maybe 30 tests, I have 3 that were over 2 megabytes per second. The rest of them are somewhere between 0.5 and 1.5.
Wow.
And is that just? First of all, should I be getting service that slow? And second of all, is that what's affecting our ability to keep?
This is a really good issue, and I've been actually finding more and more information recently. There is a price point of $389 for Infinitum telephone package.
Right.
There's another price point, I think it's $599 for Infinitum telephone package. Now, what has changed with Telmex is that $389 is from 5 to 10 megabits.
Right.
If you're paying $389 and you're getting under 5 megabits, there's something wrong.
Okay.
That's
okay.
Us.
Okay. The $599 is supposed to be 10 to 20 megabits.
But they won't bring it everywhere.
That's exactly right. They won't install it everywhere.
Well, and they're actually able to accomplish this both through fiber optics and a new style of DSL. So they are either not bringing fiber optics to you, or you live on the fringe of a DSL connection. If you live on the fringe of a DSL connection, you may have trouble getting 5 megabits of speed. Yeah. And if that's the case, you can verify that in the Telmex office. Mm-hmm. You can verify whether you're on the fringe.
Right.
You can also call the 8, or you can ask them. In fact, this is one of my favorite techniques. I call the 800 number, and I just say, I want to verify what speed I'm supposed to be getting with my contract. Right, and I actually, I've never done this in English, but somebody called me the other day and said, thank you for the advice. I was able to do it all in English through the 800 number.
What's the 800
number? 123222. 1-800. Or it's 0, I'm sorry, it's 01800. 123222. And then there's menus you have to go through.
So
and
you can just ask for an English speaker.
That's right. I never do that because I don't want to wait around for an English speaker.
Scott's right. You know, we're the situation where I live. We're lucky we even have.
That's right. You're on the fringe.
Definitely. So I don't think we can get any
better. The problem with being on the fringe is neither is available for you.
Yeah.
Neither the faster DSL nor the fiber optic is available to you.
Nor
mega cable. You're right. Absolutely right. Yeah. Because it is the fringe by definition. There's
okay.
Yeah.
Can you buy any kind of a device that will take this very weak signal that we have and somehow strengthen it?
No. Not because the problem isn't on your end. The problem is between your end and the service provider. So it's down the road. Now, Jim, where are you located? I forget.
Hermosa also. Over on Chula Vista.
So you should be able to get a better connection.
I think so, because it was faster. We're in the same place we were last year. It was faster last year than this year.
Now, I said that $599 is 10 to 20. That's what they keep saying on the phone. That's what they say in the office. I've never seen 20 megabits a second. I have seen 16. I've seen 16 megabits a second through a connection without a problem. And I would think Villa Hermosa should be capable of that, of those speeds. So what you would want to do is verify what you're contracted for and tell them what speeds you are getting. And then they will put together a work order to sort out why you're not getting those speeds.
Not for 3 weeks. Not enough. I went to Telmex and Wyman's. Not.
Did you try the 800 number?
I call the guy every morning. During the day I have 4, at night I have 1.5.
Ooh.
During the day I have 4, at night I have 1.5.
Okay.
Well, we're working on it.
Yeah,
it
right.
So frustrating.
The 6 o'clock hour is the magic moment, everything.
Sometimes it's 4, sometimes it's 6.
Everybody gets home.
Sure.
And it's a matter of use. It's like water to go play.
Yeah.
It's a matter of use.
Well, I'll tell you what I do know, is if you look at places like the Country Club, Solimar, Loma del Mar,
over at our way, it's good.
Yeah, Bahia is good because it's right on a main route. They actually have fiber optics running through the Bahia. But now with this new DSL that they've rolled out, they probably won't give you fiber optics because they don't have to. They can just replace your DSL modem and crank up your speed. But places like I just mentioned, Loma del Mar is a perfect example. You can report it until you're blue in the face. They're not responsible for your phone line. And your phone line is the problem. All the way out to their box, they're responsible for the register right out in front of the gated community, and they have no responsibility to your house in Loma del Mar. And so you're responsible for the quality of that line and installation.
Where I am, they installed it. I'm across the street from Charlie's Rock.
Yeah.
They installed the line about 4 or 5 years ago. So they're responsible for that, aren't they?
Right, yeah. If they installed it in your house, then they're responsible for it. Now, the problem with in Loma del Mar, you might as well get the $399 contract because you're never getting 10 megabits. Never getting it. And there might be an exception. There might be those first few people right there by the gate, right across from the registry. They might be able to get a much better speed. But the people in the back definitely will never get 10 megabits a second until something changes about the way they install phones in there.
What about people when they get to Naka? I have a friend that complains all the time that she can't.
Well, does she have her own installation? Because Tokunaka does their they provide Wi-Fi for their customers.
Is there.
Yeah.
Is there any hope for them?
Well, what they would have to do is they they would have to increase their capacity to offer their customers, because you're all sharing the same connection. So they'd have to provide more capacity. I imagine they can do it because they're right on the main drag. I would expect them to be able to get like 16 megabits a second. All they'd have to do is contract two or three of those to have running at the same time. You can even buy load balancing equipment now where you can plug all those connections into one connection and share that amongst everyone.
You should go and offer your services to them.
I have before.
Yeah. Well, we finally got Telmex up at our place.
Yeah.
After you were up. And he was only there about 20 minutes and everything's worked very well since.
Yeah.
I have no idea what he did. I don't care.
Well, yeah, no, it works. That's why you want a work order. You want a work order.
It was all last winter. It kept going off and cutting out, and they came a dozen times.
We're a coastal town, so we suffer from humidity and corrosion and the wind blowing and these things. Your telephone connection is not stable all the time. It. Over a couple of years, it needs to be revisited, and they have to replace lines or tighten connections or clean connections.
It's on the side.
And
Scott, I'm getting one up at my speed test. I get much faster speed readings on my phone and my Kindle than I do on my computers.
Then, are you using the exact same app?
Yeah, Ookla speed test. So I'll be getting like a 2 or 3 on my computer. I'll be getting 6 and 7 on my phone.
Wow, that almost sounds like your computer doesn't have as good a Wi-Fi connection in your house as your phone does. I've seen that before. Like, I have that experience. If I go out to my office in the back, sometimes I'll get 2 megabits, and I bring the computer to the front, and I get 6 megabits.
Yeah.
Just because of where I'm located, and it's getting interference. Yeah. And I can actually increase that by messing around with channels. Like, you, if you are...
Three different ones I play around with.
Yeah. But that's really what that sounds like to me. You might look around your work area where your computer is. Maybe you've dropped a cordless phone there or something else that's Wi-Fi there that might be interfering with it. The Wi-Fi devices can be classified by how well they handle interference. You can have Wi-Fi receivers and transmitters that are better or worse depending on how well they deal with other channels saturating where they're working. And to give you an example, at the bed and breakfast last summer, I had to buy a new Wi-Fi router. Not because the old Wi-Fi router worked just fine. There's no problems with it. The problem is everybody in our neighborhood has Wi-Fi now.
Yeah.
And the router couldn't keep up with the interference of the other Wi-Fi routers around it. There's nothing wrong with it. I can pull it out and create a Wi-Fi pocket with it without a problem. The problem came from the amount of interference. It couldn't keep up with it. And newer Wi-Fi equipment... is faster at dealing with changing channels very quickly. And there was a period of time where we would solve problems by picking a specific channel. You'd read the channels around you and go, well, here's a free piece of spectrum, and we'll set it to be always on that channel. But in a place like Anchorage, where there's Wi-Fi everywhere now, that just doesn't work anymore. There's always someone bleeding into your channel.
What makes the difference between the two pieces of equipment then?
Generation. It's literally just the generation of equipment.
Always want the latest.
Yeah. I mean, essentially that what they have inside them is, because routers are computers in themselves.
Okay.
They have a processor at a rated speed. They have a memory, like a RAM capacity.
That's why you said mine was outdated and old that time when you were at the house.
Was this? I wouldn't have said that about the fiber optic connection.
No.
Okay, this would have been something else we were looking at. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but it really is. They're rated with their own processor, their own memory, their own capacity. The latest Wi-Fi standard is AC. It's 802.11ac, which covers all the previous standards, the G, the N, the V, if you go back that far. Another thing that will happen is an older router, you may upgrade the encryption on it, because somebody like me has said, you've got to upgrade the encryption. This encryption's easy to break. But the router you had that was working just fine for Wi-Fi before, now with a higher level of encryption, can't keep up with itself and starts having problems.
So could it be a router problem in these homes on Villa Hermosa?
Yeah, and no, I mean, it could be.
Like you're using the same router as that was in the house last year?
Yeah, same router
as last
year.
Maybe it needs to be a new router.
My router, I got it this summer after the storms.
Brand new from Telmex? Mm-hmm. It should be working. It should be giving you those speeds. I would be more interested in seeing the installation of the phone line. What you could do to eliminate the Wi-Fi as being an issue is you could take that network cable that they give you with the router and plug it into your computer, get connected that way, and do speed tests. Because they actually, in the end, that's what they would prefer you've done, is plugged a computer
that's
into
a good
the router
idea.
And verify that you have the same. Because if you go immediately from 2 to 6, then you know it's Wi-Fi interference that's the problem.
Yeah. Are router and modem interchangeable here, apart the names?
They're not. But in our case, they are. But they're not. They're two separate things.
But the white modem you have is a router.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The piece of equipment that Telmex gives you
is
a modem, and that means that it makes a connection to another end for data to go across. A router, which allows you to put traffic across it. A switch, which allows you to plug in various devices to it. And a Wi-Fi access point, which allows you to use wireless devices with it. All that's in that one piece of equipment. So they're not interchangeable, but they are, because they're all included in that one device. And that's how you get most of these devices. Now, when you say router in a Best Buy, you're typically talking about a Wi-Fi switch router device. Typically doesn't have a modem included with it. But most of the devices that do have a modem included with it are the devices you get from your service provider, so you can get connected to them. Megacable, I don't know if they've changed recently. They were only distributing modems. And if you wanted Wi-Fi switch, they would give you that as a separate device that would be plugged into the modem. Or you'd bring your own and plug it into that device. And that's the way it is with the cable provider in Anchorage. We're responsible for our Wi-Fi switch router. They're responsible for the modem. How are we doing? I think we did great for me not having any topics.
No kidding.
I didn't break any topics. Well, awesome. Thanks for everybody holding out so long. Again, normally I find myself sitting here with one or two people by the end of it. Here we are, 30 minutes over our normal ending time. I still got a full table of people.
Well, we have to pay.
We have to pay.
Yeah, I'm hoping you guys aren't leaving.
We're sticking around.
All right, let me sign off on this podcast broadcast. Oh, and let me say that the last week's broadcast, because the computer shut down in the middle of everything, I still haven't posted it yet. It's because I recorded the last half on my iPhone, and I haven't bothered to put the two recordings together. I imagine there's only two or three people out there that actually care about this activity, and so it hasn't been a priority. But this has been the San Carlos Computer Club. I'm Scott Stimson with International Computer Solutions. We meet every Tuesday from 9:15 to 10:15 at Tequila's and talk about tech topics that affect us retired in Mexico. If you have any computer work out there, I'd sure appreciate it if you'd call me at my office at 226-0209 or get a hold of me through our website at internationalcs.net. You can also write me at scott@internationalcs.net. If you have questions or interest in the computer club, or you just want to listen to recordings like this, we've got them all posted on a blog that you can find at sccclub.org. You can also contact me through that as well, through scott@sccclub.org. Again, we meet at Tequila's, great place. People show up here early. I get nothing for promoting them. I'm just happy to promote them. The people will show up early and do breakfast before the meeting on Tuesdays. People show up at like 8:30 and do breakfast beforehand. Anyway, that's my spiel. I don't have a script, so I think I'm done with it. And we'll talk next Tuesday. Tech on. Talk to you guys later. Bye.